I am flying in the air at least 10-12 feet above the ground. Below me there are four lanes of cars which I am crossing effortlessly. I feel the gush of wind on my face and my eyes are set on sky above. But then my view changes as my eyes drop below horizon. Somebody just cut off my wings, is what I think as I go plummeting to the ground like a crashing meteor. I feel nothing but a blinding light on my eyes and then darkness. For a couple of minutes there I can see nothing, hear nothing, but time is ticking as I get the feeling, sort of a sixth sense, that I am being surrounded by people. A couple of them turn me over. I open my eyes slowly and wait for my blurry vision to get clear. The first thing I see is an extended hand close to me with the words, "Are you okay? Grab my hand and get up," says he. Someone I don't know, and yet I acknowledge that comforting voice by getting up. Effortlessly, as if nothing happened, I get back on my feet to see the road intersection I just flew over. "Come on, I'll take you home," he says while placing his right arm around my shoulder, and we start walking. I am unable to see this person's face clearly, and yet I am walking with him, having full confidence in him regarding where he is taking me. As we walk on the road back home, he asks, "Do you remember what just happened?" He speaks without looking at me, but he's looking front where we are heading. "Yes." I have to strain my brain a bit to recollect the recent memory. There was a girl in the middle of the road at the intersection. She was busy with her phone, completely ignoring the truck approaching the intersection at a very high speed. I saw her well in advance but did nothing. In the very last moment, I ran and pushed her out of harm's way, getting myself caught instead. And then, I pause, assuming he already knows what followed. I end the sentence abruptly because there is something else bothering me. A thought that is hovering around my head, but for some reason I am unable to pin it down. He acknowledges and then continues to walk me down the road. As we arrive the next signal, we turn left to a smaller road. That is when it hits me. A thought that should give me goosebumps, but it doesn't. I'm hesitant to say it out loud, but then I do. Am I dead? I am feeling lightheaded, but the surrounding appears normal. Regular streets that I walk countless times, same shops on the roadside, though closed now since it is early morning. The response of the man walking with me doesn't help either, as he simply smiles. "I can't be dead. No, that is not possible," I say. But I have the answer with me. I am not a flying superhero made of steel who could get hit by a speeding truck and walk away without a scratch. And yet I feel no pain. Hearing my words, he smiles again, wider this time with another of being pleased. It is as if he knows the answer, but he wants me to get there. Annoyed by his meaningless response, I look at him. This time I looked carefully to blow away the fog that is covering his facial features. "Father?" I say out loud, pushing myself away from him. There was anger in my fa, but fear in my there. This kind of response from me is understandable since I am looking at a person who died a decade ago. My father, an alcoholic, died of a liver failure. He was the one responsible for our present condition. A hard-working housemaid, that is my mother, and a school dropout bhai, a bully of the locality, that is me. As the reality strikes me, everything around me fades away in a blinding whiteness. The only thing that is visible is myself, a person look-alike my father, and the road leading to a small shack I call home. "Come, let me take you home," he says, again extending his hand towards me. As if hypnotized, I move closer. I let him place his arm around my shoulder as we walk the visible road. There are many thoughts swirling in my mind. Never in my entire life did I think about death. I was a very realistic man. Man is what I called myself. I never considered myself to be a boy since the time I turned 13 when my father died. I never mourned for him. It just made me stronger, tough, and emotionless. But now that I see him, happy, the way he was before alcohol consumed him, I was a boy again. "Why did I die? Why me? Why now?" I ask politely. "Because you did good," he says, pointing straight ahead. Up till now, my eyes were down on the concrete road following the white painted divider. I used it as a guide to walk straight, but following his extended arm, I look ahead. The shack that we were walking towards has disappeared. Instead, there is a big dry tree standing, 6 feet high and about 4 feet wide. Devoid of any leaves, the branches are prominent. Starting one from base, as I move my eyes up the trunk, it splits into numerous branches, ending at many points. The branches are glowing with blue and red. The root vein is full blue, but as I move my sight upwards, I see some of the branches glowing red. Going higher, the number of red branches goes on increasing until the highest tip of the vein is blood red. "This is you, son," he says as the tree gets closer. "Or, to be more accurate, the tree represents your this life." When we stop, we are a couple of feet away from the tree. That is when he starts explaining. "Tree devoid of leaves represent the deceased," he says, pointing at both of us. "Every soul has a tree. The branches are the lines of your life. Every point on them represents a possible instant you might experience. Here, the blue is when you were good, while the red is when you were bad, and the white line traces the moments you actually lived." As I lean in to look closer, I see that there is actually a white line, just one line with no branches, distinct in the web of randomly scattered red-blue glow. As I trace the white line from the base, it starts with blue, but then there are red areas, which keep on increasing until the white line meets the edge of a branch in blue. All this time that I am trying to take in this new information, the only thought in my mind that I care about is, I died because I did good? "Yes," he says, as if he heard what I was thinking. "Why?" I raise my voice. "Tell me," he asks. "The girl you saved in the last few moments of your life, Were you looking at her by accident, or was there some other reason? Normally, back among the living, I would feel no guilt and give a bold lie to get me out of the situation. But now, it is different. I have nothing to lose, so I confess. She is a girl I am very much attracted to for many years. I adored her, but she never looked back at me. Even though I gave her subtle hints that I liked her, she pretended as if I was invisible. So, today finally, I was going to confront her, tell her that I loved her, and, if needed, I stopped speaking. If needed, I would force her to love me back. I don't say this last part out loud, but his expressions tell me that he heard it all. He gives me a faint smile, and then looking at the tree, he speaks. This tree doesn't just show the life you lived, but also the possible moments that could have occurred had you chosen differently. He says, pointing at a specific area. Close to the edge where the white glowing line terminates, just before, there is a red branch splitting away, which instead of ending at the tree's edge, it goes back to the main vein, continuing to the topmost tip of the tree. Go ahead, he says. Touch it and see what could have happened. I take a step forward and place my middle finger exactly on the point where the red split begins. A fraction of a second. That is all I need as I push myself back with horror. The thing I just saw. The thing I would have done. Unforgivable. In an alternate timeline, as I see her busy in the middle of a road, I take this as an opportunity. While she is standing steady, I simply pass by her, mischievously patting her bottom. She yells at me and then becomes conscious early enough to escape a near accident. By then, I have time to slip away. That night, I wait for her on an empty road back home. I stop her saying, "Hey, I love you," I say, boldly grabbing her wrist. But she resists, trying to free herself. I get angry. I force her to love me back. Dragging her to a dark alley, I do horrible things to her. "But why kill me? You could have stopped me from doing this by other means. Aren't you like God now? Was I that irredeemable?" "No, you were capable of good, which is why this happened instead," he says, hinting the current outcome. But beyond that point, yes. As he stops speaking, I look back at the tree. Beyond that red split, there is no branch that ever turns blue. Then, without him saying anything, I press my finger again on the tree, on that red branch. I slide my finger right up till the topmost tip. I wanted to know what worse could have happened. I see. All of it sort of like some nightmare sequence of a movie. Me running away after doing horrible things to that innocent girl. Getting enrolled in a deadly gang, going underground in hiding, smuggling drugs, human trafficking, murders, and involvement in terrorist bombing. My mother still alive, facing all the criticism due to all my wrong deeds. In the end, when the neighboring people go to burn my mother alive with the house, I save her and bring her to my place. Then I give her a loaded gun for her protection. Instead of thanking me, she points the gun back at me, saying that I am the one who ruined her life. As I stand fearlessly knowing she won't shoot, she does, and I drop dead. Snapping out of this horrible alternate reality, I stay frozen for a moment. While I was seeing all this, it felt as if I was leaving that life. My mother was aiming for my head, but since she has no experience with a gun, she missed the mark. So instead of dying instantly, I slowly bled to death. In that moment, I was able to feel the intense pain. It was getting unbearable, which is why I removed my finger from the tree. After seeing all this, I should accept my fate without any resistance. But my bad attitude pushes me to ask one more question. Thinking that, realizing his mistake, he would send me back to world of living. Just one question I ask. All these things I could have done are wrong. But that does not mean you should get me killed. Isn't this a crime over here? Wherever we are at the moment. You murdered your own son. Aren't you even a bit guilty? Father is not surprised hearing what I just asked, but instead he speaks calmly. Son, he says, reminding me the times when he used to call me that to show how much he loved me. While I was alive, I was the person responsible for you to do bad deeds. I was the one responsible to leave you two in a bad condition when I died. Yes, I am guilty of that, which is why I volunteered to walk you this path instead of some stranger's soul. But what happened to you in the end, it was your choice, he says in a heavy tone. As I have said earlier, there still was a tiny bit flicker of goodness in you. All you needed was some motivation. His tone softens. Do you remember what you were thinking just before you charged in to save that girl? He asks, but doesn't give me time to think or see for myself. Instead, he continues. When you saw the truck fast approaching the girl, in the middle of the road, you realize that the collision is going to happen. That is when the memory of her smile flash in front of your eyes. The cute smile that she gave to you while you were sitting outside your house and she walked past you. That is when you decided to follow her. Remembering her innocent smile, without a second thought, you ran to save her, thinking these exact same words. I stop him from speaking as I say those words myself. Now that I have had my share of something magical, it would be wrong on my part if I rob the rest of the world of the opportunity to experience her beautiful smile. This is the last words before I accept that I am dead and I am ready to move to the next life. End. This was a short story written by an 18-year-old girl named Gauri Tewar for her college magazine. She wrote this story as a tribute to the guy who lost his life saving her. Gauri did not know the guy. And this whole story is entirely fictional. Actually, this was her weird way of freeing herself from the guilt that someone died because of her. The end.